these series of talks that I'm planning to share with you this session, I'm going to entitle From Bethlehem to Left Behind. However, it could be a misleading title because the series of talks really doesn't have much to do with Christmas, which we're, what are we, in the seventh day now of Christmas? Of the seventh of the 12. It doesn't have much to do with Christmas and has even less to do with the end times or tribulation. But hopefully by the end of our time together, this won't be too schizophrenic a journey. But these are going to be some thoughts about the younger years of Jesus, about his childhood, about his adolescence, his youth. There's perhaps sketchy information in Scripture about those years, but we know he lived those years. And we're going to have a look at some of those, and especially we're going to contemplate what might have been Jesus' memories as he grew into adulthood, what his memories of those younger years might have been. I want to read two verses of Scripture to start, and we'll come back to these verses again and again through these next few days. The first one is in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15. We do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who in every respect has been tested as we are, yet without sin. In every respect, tested as we are, yet without sin. The other verse goes back, comes out of the last verse of the second chapter of Luke, and refers to this season in Jesus' life, this younger season. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in divine and human favor. I discovered a wonderful little book a couple of years ago by Ken Geyer called Windows of the Soul. And what he does in Windows of the Soul, what these windows are, he describes these various windows through which the light of Christ shines and through which God communicates to us. And there were all different kinds of windows. Some were the arts, the window of music, the window of poetry, the window of drama or visual arts. Talked about the window of nature. And I took a couple of extra minutes and drove by the St. John's back here this morning. What a wonderful window to the soul watching the sunrise over the St. John's. Just gorgeous, glorious. The window of Scripture. He's speaking to us already this morning just from hearing his word. He's spoken to us through the window of music this morning. But one of the chapters in Ken Geyer's little book is the window of memory. How God can speak to us through our memories. I was surprised at Webster's Third New International definition of memory. See if this surprises you. A ceremony of commemoration. A ceremony of commemoration, historical or biographical record, a memento, the process of reproducing or recalling what has been learned or retained, a commemorative remembrance. It's interesting to me to catch that definition because it emphasizes something purposeful, being purposeful in recalling and hanging on to those memories. The great playwright Tennessee Williams put it this way in his play, The Milk Train Doesn't Stop Here Anymore. Life is all memory, except for the one present moment that goes by so quick you can hardly catch it going. Now think about that. That means that everything that's happened right up to this second in our lives is memory. And now that second's memory too. It just moved into the category of memory. And so it's all memory except what's going on right now and what's yet to come. There was a very popular movie in the 70s with Barbra Streisand and Robert Redford called The Way We Were. And I think the lyric to the title theme was by Alan Bergman. But it goes like this. Memories, like the corners of your mind, misty watercolor memories of the way we were. Scattered pictures of the smiles we left behind. Smiles we gave to one another for the way we were. Memories may be beautiful, and yet what's too painful to remember, we simply choose to forget. Well, I'm afraid that Bergman might have bought into a lie. We can't simply choose to forget. As beautifully poetic as that lyric is, the choosing to forget is a real trap and a deception. We think we can choose to forget the painful stuff, but we can't. We all have some of it that we want to forget, but we can't. We're made to remember. In Genesis 1:27, it says, "So God created humankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them." And I understand that the Hebrew word that's translated male, there in male and female, means the remembering one, or the one who remembers. Now, those of us who've had much, if you don't have to be married to know this, if you just have any kind of relationship at all with a member of the opposite sex, you might have thought that maybe things got confused, that the female is actually more usually the remembering one. We tend to forget those dates, those special dates or whatever, anything that's important. I don't know if we have the fall to blame for that or whatever. We'll explore that another time. But I'm telling you that we are made to remember. We're made to remember. We all have some painful memories we've tried to forget. Physical ones, physical abuse, verbal abuse, sexual abuse, family violence, an event that may have caused us shame, that caused us anger that we couldn't process, we didn't know what to do with. We have those memories. We're made to remember. Remembering is an important part of spiritual life, of corporate spiritual life. Psalm 78, if you read Psalm 78, it goes through the history of Israel. Creation, the story of Abraham, the calling of Abraham, the story of Joseph, then the famine comes. God makes provision in Egypt. Then that provision turns into captivity. Then you have the story of the Exodus, and God brought them out with a mighty arm. Then the stories of the manna and the quail, the water, the guidance by fire. All these memories, and these things are rehearsed in some of the Psalms and various times in the Scripture, given a way to kind of codify the story, to retell the story over and over. Stephen's speech in Acts 7, just before he's stoned, what does he do? He retells the story almost like right out of Psalm 78, just recounts this whole story. Abraham, Joseph, right down to the present moment. Most of the apostolic sermons in Acts are the exact same thing, just retelling the story, calling to memory. These people knew the story, but call them to remember it again. What's the last thing that Jesus did just before the crucifixion? He calls them together for a supper, brings out the bread and wine, and says, "Do this, why? To remember me." He knew that if we didn't do purposeful things to remember, that we would forget. Do this to remember me. We call what we sang this morning, and we'll say in a few minutes, the memorial acclamation. Christ has died. Christ is risen. Christ will come again. Why do we remind ourselves of it? Because of the power of remembering, of calling it to mind. John wrote in his first letter, "I don't write these things to you because you don't know them. I write these things to you because you do know them." Is that a strange thing to say? It seems strange. Why would you tell me something that I already know? Because you're inclined to forget by accident or on purpose. Jesus had memories too. Childhood memories. Memories in his youth, in his adolescence. One of these, and I'm going to kind of preview the last talk, the talk that where we'll end up next week. One of those memories was one of being left behind. in Jerusalem when he was 12 years old. Think about this. Going with your family to this wonderful festival, this feast, going in a large group of people, kind of a very celebratory, happy, upbeat, jubilant atmosphere, the excitement of the trip. You get there, you have the celebration, your family leaves without you and is traveling 2 days before it dawns on them that they've left you. Now, of course, the eternal Son of God immediately sees the opportunity. He's teaching the elders. That's not a problem. But what about the 12-year-old Son of Man? Feelings of abandonment, being left behind by his family. He had to have been tempted to feel rejected, to feel abandoned. He had to have been tempted to feel anger, just like we were tempted in all those different areas when we were younger. Mark West, who's the Southeast regional coordinator for a ministry called Theotherapy, says this: in order to be a healthy, whole believer, our will must be submitted. Jesus modeled that for us. Not my will, but thine be done. The will must be submitted. He also said the mind must be renewed. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Romans 12:2. The will must be submitted. The mind must be renewed. But he says this: the emotions must be expressed. The emotions can't be bottled up. If we try to forget them, try to deny them, try to ignore them, they'll come back to haunt us. We can try to hold that beach ball down under the water as long as we can, and eventually it's going to come back with a force and a vengeance that'll do yet more damage. The emotions must be expressed. This is hinted at in Ephesians 4:26. Be angry and don't sin. Be angry, recognize the fact that you have anger, express it, but don't sin. Jesus didn't bury his memories. He processed all of these things that he might have been tempted to do. He processed anger and didn't sin. Processed rejection and didn't sin. Processed shame and didn't sin. Disappointment, grief. He processed those things and didn't sin. We have a high priest. We do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every aspect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. And there's great news. We are baptized into him. We are seated in the heavenlies with him. We are in him by virtue of his death and resurrection, by virtue of our baptism, and by virtue of new life in his Spirit. And there are ways for us to process these memories and express these emotions that we have in the process of redemption that he wants to work in us. This week, I'm going to try to call us to look back on some of those childhood memories. Some of them may be squirming around in the back of your mind right now, those misty watercolor pictures that memories are. Some of them precious, some of them so painful we don't want to stir there. I don't want to call us to go on any fishing expeditions, but we are going to be quiet before the Lord in some of these chapel services. We'll do it this morning, right now. And when we go into this season of silence, invite the Lord to stir those memories, any memories that he may want to surface in your heart, in your mind, and just begin to give those to him. And in these next few days, we'll invite him to help us process those things and to come into that benefit of being in Jesus, the one who has processed memories and is victor over all darkness, over all shame, over all rampant anger, bitterness, King of Kings, King of Peace. Let's be still and quiet before the Lord.
Easter.